It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday the 15th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Google is always working on a zillion different projects with varying degrees of success. It's kind of the Google way. Well, this week, the tech giant is making waves with a domain name registration service akin to the likes of GoDaddy. What happens when the company that archives the internet's addresses starts selling them? Nova Safo reports.
Google says 55% of small businesses right now don't have their own websites, and that's what it wants to change.
It's still difficult for the cake baker and the dog walker and the babysitter to set up their own website.
Blake Newman, who runs a website design agency, was one of the people invited to test out Google's domain name registration service before it went public.
It's relatively sparse. I mean, it's Google-like.
Which Newman points out is the opposite of a lot of other registrars, which he says can be confusing even to professionals. So does that mean that GoDaddy, Enom, Network Solutions, and others should be worried?
I don't see people rushing to transfer their domains.
Phil Corwin heads the domain name industry's lobbying group.
It's a competitive space, and some of the smaller players, they're not going for a mass market. They're going for more of a niche market.
But for those 55% of small businesses without websites, Google is banking on simplicity trumping niche. In New York, I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
One of Google's experiments that doesn't seem quite ready for the masses is Project Aura. The idea is really interesting, a modular phone with replaceable parts that you can build and customize to your liking. Think using more space on the phone for a camera or memory storage. Project Aura had a developers conference this week. One of the suggestions is that modular phones like this could cut down on our vastly expanding global gadget trash pile. Matthew Norden at green energy investment firm MNL Partners is skeptical.
History would tell us that when you give consumers more cheaper electronic gadgets, they tend to just buy more of them, and it swamps any kind of efficiency effect you get from being able to swap units in and out.
Norden says for the phones of today, there's really just one holy grail, the battery. And if you can build phones and batteries that don't require buying a whole new device whenever either of those technologies leaps forward, then you've got something. Because it's 2015, we're taking a regular opportunity to go back. Back where, Doc?
Back to the Future!
Part 2. Because in the classic 1989 movie about time travel starring Michael J. Fox, there were a lot of predictions about tech that would exist 25 years later. And now, here we are. This week's installment of our ongoing Back to the Future series we're doing with the website Gizmodo is about license plates. In the movie, all of the cars in 2015 have license plates that are barcodes. Well, in our real world, we don't need barcodes because cameras have been scanning and tracking regular old plates for a while now. This has potential for good and bad uses of our data. Cade Crockford is director of the Technology for Liberty Project at the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts. Hi, Cade.
Hi.
How long have we been recognizing license plates with technology?
Police in the United States have only been using this technology for about 10 years. It really started to take off over the past 5 or 6 years, in part thanks to the Department of Homeland Security, which has provided at least $50 million in grants to state and local law enforcement specifically for license plate readers.
How do automatic license plate readers work?
So there are little cameras that store an image of the license plate and the car, along with the time and date stamp and a GPS marking. And then they also run the license plate number against any number of lists that the law enforcement agency or private corporation wants to check plates against. So that could be for cops, it would be stolen cars. For repo companies, that would obviously be cars that repo companies are looking to repossess.
You talk about the fact that this is not just law enforcement, but private companies as well logging this data. How does that part of it work?
There are a number of companies that have profited immensely off of the sale of license plate reader technology to all levels of law enforcement in the United States. The most successful company, I think, is Vigilant Solutions. This is a corporation that runs a nationwide license plate tracking database. So these records are collected by state and local law enforcement, and they're also collected by repo men, tow truck drivers who drive around conducting this dragnet surveillance, basically. This database is accessible to law enforcement, and it's also available to private companies.
Do you think it's inevitable that people will just lose their privacy as we become more technologically advanced?
I don't think that the privacy horse has left the barn, and there's actually a relatively easy fix with license plate readers. We really just need common sense reforms that would restrict the number of days, frankly, that information can be held by government agencies.
And like a dozen states are trying to regulate this right now.
Yeah, there are a number of states that have already passed legislation that deals with license plate readers. Again, it's really not a complicated problem. The government should not be keeping records about people who it doesn't suspect are involved in criminal activity.
Cade Crockford is director of the Technology for Liberty Project at the ACLU of Massachusetts. Cade, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
You'll be able to find more of this series all year long at gizmodo.com and marketplacetech.org. And we're pretty psyched about this. We think some of you will be too, so we set up an email account. If you have any ideas about things you think we should feature, people we should talk to, or just any feedback you have, email us at DeLorean Historians, as in DeLorean Historians, at gmail.com. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.